Great to have you back on Racing Pulse, and we are live from the Trainers Tower, and it's fair to say the heartbeat of the tower has just arrived for the last 15, 20 years. Peter Moody's wandered back into his old haunt with his good mate Mick Price, who we should say happy birthday, Mick, a special day today.
63 today.
63, you don't look 63, fit as a fiddle.
You're only as old as the...
Okay. Yes,
I saw that on Twitter earlier, yeah.
It's going to kill you eventually. So.
Have you been in this training tower much, Moods, in the last couple of years?
No, I brought a Tenavise out here to gallop a month or 6 weeks.
Yeah, you come back for your fridge.
And I've got to pick up my fridge. I reckon I bought that years ago.
Did you?
Galligotis has got to pick up his toaster that he pinched.
Old wedding gift for someone. But no, I was here a little bit doing my Moody on the mic stuff for Ladbrokes.
Yes.
In the early stages of my hiatus. But no, I haven't spent much time here at all.
Do you remember when you first wandered into the Caulfield Training Complex? What year would that have been?
2001, I think. I took over Jim Conlon Stables in the members' car park there. And I used to bring a few tea bags and a bit of sugar and... Got here one morning, there was nothing, and Lee Friedman was here, and he said, did you bring anything? I said, no, did you? He said, I bring wisdom. I don't have to buy anything. I said, well, that's good and get gold. Freddy, you go and have a cup of effing wisdom and enjoy it and put a bit of sugar in it while you're having it.
Mooch is in one of those moods where he's going to say something really dodgy today. Hey, just looking over where Amalfi was and that... It was sort of off the block, wasn't it? And where that is now a massive housing estate. That indicates how much has changed in a short period of time here.
Yeah, well, there's wonderful. There's a beautiful old wooden barn down there somewhere. Mm. Is it still there? I can't remember the people that used to live there. And I had 8 boxes at Jim Conlon's place and half a dozen boxes just around the corner in this magnificent old wooden barn. Mm. And I presume it's probably still down there, hidden in those back streets, the cobblestone streets.
What did it look like when you got here, Mick? Because the thing that I'm really happy that the MRC are doing with whatever they do in the future is they're going to retain that red brick look. And whenever I think of Caulfield, I think of red brick. How familiar is this to you now to when you first wandered in?
I thought it was really good when I first walked in because everything was set. You know what I mean? It was a successful, high-functioning training centre straight up. Moved into boxes that had been successful, albeit they're only 12 by 12 wooden boxes, and the thoroughbred racehorses just destroy them every day, which is the MRC just keep fixing them up for us. But I slotted in here straight away. I think I come in a couple of months before winter, and I was going average and trained 6 winners in the next couple of months, and I thought, wow, this place works. It's just worked ever since.
Was this tower here when you...
Yeah.
Because when we spoke to Colin Little, he said there was an overturned drum and 2 wooden stumps, and he and Jeff Murphy and Ken Hilton used to stand there. And when you walked into this tower, who was here?
Oh, it would have been here then. I think Freedies were just leaving. Obviously, Colin Little was. Angus Armanasco was still living in the house, but he wasn't training, I don't think.
Bruce McLaughlin, I think, had the part of Angus's back in those days, and Rob McGuinness.
Brian Ralph. Yep, I reckon.
Jim Maloney?
No, he came, the Maloneys came when Epsom came. Epsom finished.
Sorry, yeah.
Frank King was here, there's a few old guys, Jack Clark, few old guys were, here.
Did you had you two met before you came to Caulfield? Did you know of each other?
No. No, but look, where me and Moods got sort of chimed in was the properties up at Belgrade.
Yep.
Because I remember having dinner with him one day on the Gold Coast, and he said, look, Sarah wants to thinking of, property at Mornington. I said, mate, don't do Mornington. It's no good. No, it's not going to be viable enough.
Worth $25 million today.
that was a good tip.
But Belgrave on the map was very doable to Caulfield. So it's only like 30 minutes up the freeway, and it's been good. It's been good up there. It's a beautiful place to live, and raise children. And so then Moods had his 3 and I had 4, and there were 7 girls. And
not a spout between them.
No. Then there was, Sarah and Caroline were, you know, friends, and me and Moods were friends, and it just worked from there, you know. Yeah.
Did you, Moods' big regret, and I was talking to Luke Nolan about this the other day, was that he's got his lifestyle sorted out now, where he gets to enjoy his kids, and you always said that, I wish I'd could nearly turn back the clock a bit to change my diary when I was in my halcyon days with the kids. Did you feel that you're a different sort of guy than Moods? Did you feel with Steph and Kelly and the others, if there are any, that you were as obsessed with Moods during that era that you didn't get a lot of time to look up?
No, and I never wanted to be. You know, it was probably one of the mistakes I made with, you know, if you set out to have a good horse training model, you need to be a big trainer to be competitive. You need to be, you know, like anything these days, I guess. But when I moved into Jeff Murphy's, there were 30 boxes, and mistakenly I thought, well, this is me, partly because I wanted to have that little bit of life left, you know. I didn't want to be 7 days a week and then just, I don't think it's fair on your family, but I've always left a little bit aside. I mean, you know, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 worker, and Christmas holiday, Easter holiday, public holidays, those people get a lot more out of all that family stuff than horse trainers get. And I haven't been one that, you know, I've still had to sacrifice, and your family has to sacrifice, but I've always had a small balance.
Mm. Now, there's been a lot of talk about Moods and some of the antics that we got up to in this box. Is it true, all of these stories of chairs and faxes getting thrown out windows and maybe a few hissy fits in this trainer's tower?
Did you ever throw a human being from the... from here?
Tony Hayden.
Well, when the fax of the chair went out the window, Smurden blew up and I threatened to throw him out, and then he stepped outside.
What was the reason behind that?
No, we used to have a desk here where we were sitting, and I was trying to fax something one morning and it obviously didn't work, and someone had irritated me at the time, so I thought the best way to get a new fax was to make sure people realised this bastard was broken. So when it was in 25 pieces down there on the ground with all my cigarette butts, we'd get a new one, and we did, and it was good. We even got a computer, and we got televisions and everything.
So you did it for the greater good?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did. But, listen, you get on one another. It's better throwing the facts out the machine than doing something stupid.
But you were the only one that physically threw things out. Was that because you were under so much pressure at the time to be top dog? Was it everything that you just used to blow up a lot more than should have?
No, I used to blow up. The good thing about being in here, and we've had this conversation before, Mick and I and with a few people, is you'd sort your problems out here, and when you walked out the door, there wasn't a problem in the world. You sorted it out straight away, and don't walk around with droopy lip. Get it off your chest, sort it then and there, and get on. And that was the great thing about being here and the camaraderie that we had between the trainers. And no sort of dragging your feet after that.
In football circles, there's a thing called leading teams, where they put someone in the middle and you get to give them honest feedback. Is that similar to what happened in here?
Oh, most definitely. And you had to have a thick skin. And if there was a recording in this tower, quite possibly all of us would be either institutionalised or in jail.
Yeah, I remember Terry Bailey, the chief steward, walking in. He didn't do the trials much, but he did them one day. And he walked out and he said, "Geez, not for the faint-hearted in here." That's the chief steward.
But it was tremendous times, and that's going to... I've really missed that. And, it was great, great memories. Well, you know, going right back. I remember my first time here at Caulfield. I brought Billy Mitchell's horses down and stayed with Brian Ralph in the stables over here, which is now Lord Lodge. And at the time, Roy Higgins had just purchased the two Russian Derby winners.
Yep.
I reckon. So that was back in the 80s. And Murph was over here. They were all off track. Angus used to walk around.
They trialled it to Long one day, those two Russian horses.
and right through to today, it's been an unbelievable facility. I was only thinking, walking across the training grass here, we had a CEO, Warren
Brown. The golfer.
Warren Brown. Warren Brown, he was a CEO, and his office faced the course proper there, and it's a big glass window. And Mick and I stood on the training grass and rang him and said, "We're having problems with this grass. Jason might have been holidays. You need to give them some money to fix this up. And you need to come and look at it so we can show it to you, bastard." It was pretty uncouth language. And we had him dead set shitting himself. And he said, "Oh, listen, I'm not at work yet." And we said, "Turn around, you piece of..." And he was standing there, and we could see. We were looking at him. He had to turn around and look at us.
So then
he had to put his gumboots on and trudge out to us on the grass. We were standing right in front of his office.
Is it hard for the administrators to bridge the gap between their role and your role? Is it quite often hard for them to get what you guys go through and you to understand what they're doing, including what's happening here and what the reasons why you guys are out?
They've got a mammoth business to run. And all the things connected with it and the wagering and all that. But this isn't only for this race club. Race clubs Australia-wide. Remember why you're here. It's for racing. I know you need different revenue streams and you've got to create different aspects of your business to make it viable. But you're here for racing, for the participants and the horses. And you've got to work closely with them to put on a great show, to bring people in and grow our great sport. It's great to have pubs and clubs and tabarets and sports fields and soccer fields and support the local swimming gymkhana, but you're here to put on a show and race. It's a racetrack.
This club's very ambitious, Mick, isn't it? And so is Moonee Valley and so are Cranbourne and the VRC, and they've all got a grand vision of what their individual futures should look like, but it's going to be interesting to see how it all actually plays out with what works best in the next 10 or 20 years.
Well, it's going to unfold as it unfolds, isn't it? Some going to win. I mean, all that talk about night racing, I mean, you know, what are you going to have? Flemington want it, Caulfield want it, Cranbourne have it, Pakenham have it, Moonee Valley have it. That can't work. All that night racing cannot work. So something's going to have to give, but I don't know, it's a changing industry every year, isn't it?
I want to talk about some of your great moments here. We'll take a break and come back. But can you remember the day that you unveiled Black Caviar out here at the training track, Moons, or the first time that she gave the inkling of what she could become?
No, not really. Listen, it was a great period for me when she was rocking along. We had Typhoon Tracy, and I had a great group of two-year-olds that roared for effort. I think won the Blue Diamond that year, and I think very sadly he passed away this week. So
did he really?
Sad for participants there, for the ownership group there, a reward for effort. And early days, you know, she was just another run-of-the-mill two-year-old, and it wasn't until I think we might have given her a little jump out in the inside grass here. She went nice. We went to Cranbourne. She went super, and she just kept improving from there. So there wasn't one specific moment that I could put my finger on. She was just another nice horse, and very fortunate at the time that I had a stable full of bloody terrific horses, you know.
We asked Colin Little earlier in the week, John Maloney, what's the greatest training performance you've seen here? And they both said you and Black Caviar, undefeated with all the ailments she had. Mick, you were here at the time watching what unfolded. What did you make of that performance of Moose to keep her going undefeated?
Well, I often thought to myself, Jesus, I couldn't have done that. So, look, 25 out of 25.
So you're more impatient than him. So
no, but taking her overseas and nursing her, and, she was a big, heavy thing, and it wasn't information that got out there how difficult she was to train and keep sound, but I think, the Tony Hayden and Mood's done a fantastic job with that mare, obviously, and, not to be seen in our lifetime, I wouldn't have thought. 25 out of 25.
Just before we do the break, was there a collective pride when someone had a good horse here? Even if you didn't always get on, when Weekend Hustler was booming, when Pompey Ruler and all the mixed champions as well were booming, was there always that sense that there was something to look out the window, whether it was your champion or someone else's, and it was all part of the Caulfield Armoury?
Well, it was a great promotion for the training facility, whether you had it or not. Of course, we wanted to have it, but it was a great promotion for our facility and made it easy for us to sell our product. And whether it was Tony Vazel or Ross McDonald or Colin Little, whoever had the good horse, Mick or I or Smurdy or whoever, it enabled us to sell our product here and say this is the best training facility in Australia. And it was for a great decade and probably still is today, but it's not going to be there.
Do you feel that way as well, Mick, when you were looking out the window at your champions and everyone else's, that this was a champion precinct?
Well, there's no doubt. It's the public perception of where they want their horses trained. You know, in the ownership group out there, your marketability as a trainer is connected with the success of the track. There's no doubt about it. Because when owners are selecting their trainer, it's part of it. So, yeah, for sure.
We're with Mick Price, Peter Moody. Some more stories to come. I want to ask about that unbelievable suit that you paraded like caviar out here in one day as well.
And we're going to talk, got a quid out of that.
We're going to talk about some of Mick's stars all coming up on Racing Pulse after this break.
The race came Rustic Dream, but Al Mansour in front, 150 to go. No Bazil Bay. Here's Rustic Dream jumping out of the ground. Al Mansour in front of Rustic Dream, out deep flying from Helm, but Al Mansour, Rustic Dream dived. Oh, golly, this is close. Al Mansour, Rustic Dream, who's flown at him right on the line.
Well, that was Rustic Dream winning the futurity. Was it 09, Rick?
99.
99, that's what I mean, 99.
Yeah, of course
I knew there was a 9 there.
Not 150.
That was your very first Group 1.
Correct, short half head. I think I paid 20 grand for him at Melbourne Premier, and some nice people bought into him. Yeah, my first Group 1, it was very good. Peter Mertens.
Peter
Mertens wrote it.
Was that almost a bit of a relief? Because it maybe took a while to get
Hell
the first
yes.
Group 1.
Hell yes. Yeah, what did that take me? About 6 or 7 years, so... Yeah, slow starter.
Like your first sexual experience, it would have been easier to go straight to the second one.
Thank you, Peter.
Yes.
Was that like, did that open the floodgates? Is it like,
no.
Once you get the monkey off the back,
no, not
it's
at
easier
all.
To get your second
not
one?
Not at all. No such
one?
Thing in this game as floodgates. It's just a day by day, week by week, month by month. Build your success and your client base and just keep at it and, you know, provide the good results and the good service. And, I've never seen floodgates as such, I don't think.
Can I just ask both of you about with the same question we asked Colin and John Maloney the other day about when, because you experienced it at Epsom as well, you've been evicted multiple times.
Black widow.
did you get it at the time? And has it become more obvious to you as to why this transition had to occur? And do you feel like you should still be training here? Is the reason good enough?
Look, you know what? It's done, and I'm not a great one to look back, and the Cranbourne's going to be good, and... Who cares? Done.
Yep.
That's what I think.
You feel the same way?
Yeah, well, it's very sad. It's probably a natural progression to some degree, but the success Caulfield's had, we had started having these meetings in 2001 when I came here, and it was going to be 5 years, rolling 5 years. From next year, it'll be 5 years, and it'll never shut, it'll never close. It won't close under my watch, but obviously got to someone's watch and they closed it, which is... very disappointing. And like I said, race clubs, please don't lose sight. You're supplying racing, and training is a part of that.
Does it worry you that at some point in the future there isn't going to be a horse? You know, the community, the human population is... This is Melbourne. Is there a disconnect going to form in some way when all the horses are no longer in Melbourne?
Well, one of the things that opened my eyes up at Randwick, you might remember they had a big old tin fence all the way around Randwick. No one could see in it. And then at Allison Road, from the 2,000 metre start up to the back of the mile, they put in this chain wire fence. And to see the people from all walks of life standing there looking in at track work of a morning while they're waiting for their buses to go down Allison Road to go to the city. Saturdays, you see them there on race days looking through. People are engaging. And are we going to lose that? You know...
Do you think it's important that the horses are trained where the people are, Mick? Or?
Well, you can't have it. Residential C and council regulations now these days, it can't be done. So it's not going to be done. Flemington probably has a lifespan on it. They need to go to areas where it's zoned, it's acceptable, and it's concentrated in bigger areas with bigger numbers and more trainers and better facilities, rather than a bit here and a bit there and a bit there and a bit there. Mm-hmm.
The extension of that is the tracks, and Josh Blanksby, the CEO, said on Monday he thinks there should be rationalisation of tracks and probably racing administration as well. Now, obviously, the big talking point is Sandown. Both Racing Victoria and the MRC have come out and said no decision's been made, but if it is sold, it's going to be the betterment of the industry, which would mean another racetrack would be built somewhere else. Moods and Mick, what are your thoughts on that? And if they do sell... the building of a new precinct, a new racecourse?
Well, we've got a beautiful racetrack now. It's nearly the geographical centre of Melbourne, Sandown. There's that much land around there. Why can't we make a precinct that is residential, put restaurants and hotels in there as a part of the racetrack so the people don't lose touch of it? You haven't got training there. Just keep the racetrack. You don't need those 200-year-old grandstands that hold no one. You just need a small facility for jockeys and the minority of people that go there in winter. You know, enough people to hold a stand to hold 1,000 or 200, you know, 2,000 people, and have grasslands welcome. Put picnic tables and barbecues, but keep that racetrack. It is a great racetrack, and now the horses are on that eastern side of Melbourne, and I've heard Matty go on about this, the east and west divide. We need that track out there, you know, and it's a great racetrack. Why would you risk closing that down and building another facility that's going to take 5 or 10 years to work and have rebuilds and all the dramas in the world? It's a great facility. Don't lose it.
Just on that too, which what I don't quite understand about this, whether this big training and racing precinct is created in the north and partially funded by the sale of Sandown. The horses, to me now, are in the east and the west. Is there a need? I mean, and Pat, if you were to create a brand new racetrack to, you know, to service the overflow and all this stuff, isn't Pakenham already that track? If you want to put one out where the demographic is growing out to, I don't quite understand why there's this obsession with building a massive training centre in the north when all the horses are in the east and the west.
Because I think the industry has a responsibility to provide owners and punters with the best facilities they can provide. I reckon one of the worst costs in this industry is injury to racehorses, which is a cost of people's investment, which is never spoken about. Now, this is why these race clubs view trainers as whingers and complainers. But we need the best facilities, the best surface, the best grass for our horses to be sounder for longer. And it just, you know, it creates momentum in the business and owners will reinvest. But owners can't reinvest if their horses are breaking down because we've got substandard facilities. Who is going to supply these facilities to the industry? Well, the industry has to take the responsibility to provide the surfaces. We can't all be David Hayes, stick $20 million in Euroa and have a beautiful facility. If you want the number of horses to supply the number of meetings in our Victorian model and New South Wales, which is humongous, you know, the amount of races we have, you should put fantastic facilities in. And if the money goes to that facility, whether it's in the north and the south, whatever, build it and they will come. That's the supply of our horses to the races.
The facilities, you talk lavishly about Pakenham, you're going to Cranbourne, you love that, you've spoken about Crawford. Other facilities good enough at the moment? They seem to be the main ones.
You can always improve on it. There's been a massive investment into Cranbourne, and Mick and a lot of the boys are going there. We need that investment to continue into Pakenham. There's been a massive investment into Ballarat. So Pakenham's the next one that needs to be built up, and I know, and I think Mick would readily tell you, I sort of had this, not an argument, a discussion with why are you going to Cranbourne when there's a lot of horses. Cranbourne's already built. And Mick said to me, he said, Pakenham's 10 years away. So they need to keep investing in that, and then whether it's a new facility. But do we need a new racetrack? I believe not. We might need another training facility in 10 years' time, but work on what you've got. I don't believe we need that new racetrack. Get that out of your head. You've got the perfect racetrack there, probably the best racetrack in Australia.
Gents, we're running out of time. I've got to ask you about some of your horses as well, but favourite Caulfield moment, Mick?
Oh, you know what, just walking in here, and I'm walking out today, and this goes 25 years, and I've loved every minute of it. That's my favourite part.
Was that a real special one with Froggy, Light Fantastic?
Well, it got beat the day he needed to win. C. Williams popped up and nutted us that day, but that was going to be a very emotional day, and rode it a treat, and that was the day, you know, when he was informed during the day of his father's passing, and they stopped the whole meeting. Mm. So the mounting yard was like, everyone was frozen to the spot. That was really, really unusual day. Anyway, he rode it super and got beat, which never pray to the racing god because there is none.
Yeah, exactly. That day proved it.
You've had correct. So many great moments here, from Blue Diamonds to you winning an Australian Cup here with Pompey Ruler as well.
Yeah, Lank and Rupee, won an Oakley Plate here. I've had, like I said, the whole 25 years for me has gone very fast. It's been the making of me as a trainer, and I've loved every minute of it here.
Black Caviar is the obvious one for you, Moods, but how special was it to win the Caulfield Cup this year?
That was probably the icing on the cake for me. I sort of thought back, I've won the Diamond and the Guineas and all those races here and had unbelievable success. But to win that Caulfield Cup this year, I didn't realise it would mean so much. That was very special. It was the cherry on top. It was very special. And like Mick, wouldn't trade in my time here at Pakenham for anything. It was an unbelievable learning curve, working beside good blokes like him and plenty of others, learning plenty and just really enjoying it.
I'm sure you'd like to win a Zipping Classic as well. Can you believe you're $1.50, a Spanish mission?
Yeah, well, I'll take it if it comes. We're looking at the market. I'll get the
four. You've got cherry pick tonight.
I don't think I've won a Zipping Classic out at Sand. I trained Menegar at his next start after he won the Zipping Classic, I think. But, that'd be sweet. He's a nice horse, Spanish mission. I think you'll see a bit of him in the next 12 months.
Is he, do you think, a wait for age horse in the making, or is he going to come back for a Melbourne Cup?
Wait for age.
Wait for age.
I hope he's good enough to come back for a Melbourne Cup, but I wouldn't be surprised if his CV might be too full.
Just a quick one too. How's on Thunderstruck?
Perfect. He's in the paddock, and he'll be set for the All-Star Mile. So all the DCD fans, get out there and vote for him.
And how's Ayrton going?
Ayrton has had about 3 weeks in the paddock. He had 7 weeks of intensive antibiotic and anti-inflammatory. He lost a lot of weight, and he's becoming happy. But he's probably got another 2 months to go.
Mooch, do you remember the day Jimmy Meek sauntered up, coughed, he splattered his guts out, and we all
dragged one up from his toenails?
We all stood here and said, oh, it's really time for Jim now. He's not going to last much longer. 15 years later, he passed away.
Skipton, what a great man. And that was the institution of Caulfield. And the old fella used to ride his pony up here, Mick. He used to stable it over the road. Old trainer, and he kept his pony for another 20 years after he trained horse. He used to come out here and poke out here on the pony, and the great old jock used to sit over in the tower. Mm. Apollo 11.
Yep, Cole? No.
Les Cole? Les?
No, no.
Les Coles?
Anyway, we're getting old here.
Yes, come on.
You've just chalked up 1 year older too.
Yeah, 63 today. 63. Well done. Hey, boys, it's been great to reminisce about this unbelievable place. They should have a plaque with all the trainers, or at least a big photo of the farewell of Caulfield trainers as a memorial over there and the new grandstand that they built and everything as well. Moods, good to see you. Incentivise going well as well? Spelling?
Incentivise just travelled back to Queensland on Tuesday night, back to Windermere Stud, Steve Tregays. So he'll have the next couple of months up there. Perfect. Off, and all reports are good.
All right, leave us with one winner each. My last winner out of Caulfield for you.
I reckon our Playboy's flying. His first time 1800, but he might win.
All right, and Brereton for you.
Brereton in the Merson Cooper Saturday.
Beautiful. All right, thanks so much for your time, gents. It's been great reliving all the memories here at Caulfield. We've got to take a quick break. More to come on the other side of this.